Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Cracks Sidewalks. It's about time for the season preview. Phil, are you excited?
I'm very excited. The Packers managed to blow a winnable game against the Rams, so I'm very excited to move on and get into the Marquette basketball season.
Yeah, I think between the baseball postseason ended for a couple of teams, I think many of you are ready to move on to college basketball. That's kind of the way I've always been, is like the two teams I cheer for most passionately are Marquette basketball and the Atlanta Braves. So basically by the time the Braves are done, it's time for me to really focus in on Marquette basketball. So by the time MLB is done, and then by the time Marquette is eliminated from the tournament, it's time to look at spring training and start looking at baseball again. So I think we're kind of in that transition period, and due to some scheduling conflicts we got next week, I didn't think we'd be able to get another podcast in before the first game against UMBC. So Phil and I are going to basically do our season preview where we go game by game. We've kind of been doing this every year for the past however many years we've been doing this. So we'll be doing a game by game pick of what we think Marquette's record is going to be in the season. First, let's take care of just a few other news and notes around in the Marquette basketball universe over the last few weeks. The most notable, Phil, is that Greg Elliott is going to be out until, looks like, possibly mid-December with a broken hand, and some people are even tossing around the idea of like maybe he might have to redshirt depending how that rehab goes. How does that strike you, Phil, as how Marquette may have to deal with the loss of Greg Elliott for at least the first month of the season?
Yeah, well, and I don't know if it's a broken. I thought it was some torn ligaments, similar to what he did last year.
Did I say broken hand? But it's a hand injury.
Yes, it's his thumb.
Same hand, right? It's the same hand he hurt last year. So yeah, he is. I misspoke if I said broken hand, but yeah, he does have a hand injury, and he's going to be out till December. But still, this is a guy who worked his way into the regular rotation for Marquette last year, and certainly seemed to help on the defensive end a little bit, but yeah, Marquette may have to be without him for a little while.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, right? I mean, as we always talk about this stuff, the nice thing is red shirts don't have to be declared until they're declared, right? So it's not like they've got to make a choice now. They can see where the team's at. If November and December are pretty disastrous for Marquette or there's other injuries, then you absolutely bring him back. Otherwise, if Marquette's clicking on all cylinders and because there is the obviousness that we've got 12 quality players on the roster and not all of them can have starters minutes or even, north of 5 or 10 minutes a game. So if the team's clicking come the end of December, maybe you have a luxury at that point to say, all right, Greg, why don't we keep sitting you and maybe we can redshirt you. I mean, it wouldn't hurt for him to spend some more time with Todd Smith in the weight room and kind of, bulk out further and we need more guards. So it's going to be interesting. The question is the depth, right? Do we, Greg was essentially our third string point guard after Joseph Chartouni and Marcus Howard. So what happens if he's not available, right? Do you?
Right. I think you kind of hit it on the head there. I think basically the way the team is playing is going to determine whether a redshirt comes into play. If we get into December and Marquette is still struggling defensively and maybe Marcus Howard is proven to maybe not be, just still be better off the ball and not doing as well as a backup point guard, or maybe even if Chartouni is either not what we hoped he would be, or like you said, if there's an injury, that could also come into play as like, well, we need Greg back out there. But if the team is clicking along, if they've settled into the rotations, maybe Wojo may go to Greg and say, look, Greg, there's going to be more minutes available on this team over the next few years, especially after Chartouni and Marcus graduate or move on. I think you could be a much better player down the road, and it may be for the best, even if you're not, as you recover from this hand injury, if you're still not 100%, let's get you 100% and give you 3 great years after this. That'll be a discussion they'll have, but like you said, I think it's the luxury is they don't have to commit to anything until he's done rehabbing.
Right.
They're just going to see how this goes. And if they get to mid-December and Marquette seems to be doing fine without him and he's still not 100%, it's like, well, is it really worth you gutting it out for just a few minutes a game when maybe you can get three full seasons in after that? So that'll be a decision they'll monitor down the road, and I think as we'll have to see how the point guard minutes play out. And you mentioned, like, who's the third string point guard, say, if they want to keep Marcus off the ball and Chartouni needs to go to the bench for a rest or foul trouble or whatever. You know, I don't know, maybe that's a place for Sakar to play a few minutes at the point. Maybe Jamal Cain can play a few minutes. I don't know. I'm sure that's something they're working out at practice right now. Be interested to see who does most of the ball handling. But I would think upwards of 90% of the ball handling would be done by Chartouni and Marcus Howard. And then they'll go to a third string only if they really have to.
Yeah, well, and two things come to mind with this. One, I mean, it is unfortunate because probably guard depth is where Marquette had the most, if this team had a glaring weakness, it was probably depth at the 1-2, and being without Greg certainly impacts that. But the other thing is the long-term concern. I mean, for me, I'm not a doctor, nor have I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express recently.
I play one on Twitter sometimes.
Oh, well, that's good. That's the right place to play things. But, you know, it's the same hand he hurt. It's a ligament issue like he had last season. You really probably don't want to rush him back. Now, obviously the doctors are going to make the decisions and the coaches are going to hopefully make the decisions as well as Greg, going to make the decisions that are best for his current and future. But you really, you know, I would be real cautious with that if I was him, just simply because you don't want it to happen again, right? So make sure you're fully rehabbed, and you would hope with the roster they have and the experience they have that they could afford, even if he comes back to play this season, they could afford to let him kind of work his way back and not force it.
Yeah, it's a shame that basketball doesn't have a similar redshirt rule to football, because now football has the rule where a guy can play full games and still redshirt. It'd be nice if there was a similar percentage in basketball, like say Greg could play, you know, I don't know, 6-7 games and still call this a redshirt year.
It would be certainly worthwhile to, like, get him back, you know, even if they said the same four games, it would be good to get him back into even four games to see where he's at and and that sort of thing. But it's all going to depend on how this team is doing. I would not at all be shocked if the team struggles in non-conference with all that's on the line for this season and the expectations around the team. I would not be even a little bit shocked to see Wojo bring Greg Elliott back this season.
Right. So I think there's pressure is the correct word, but I think there's a little bit of anxiousness that everyone wants to see this team win. And I think Wojo's tired of going to the NIT and everything. I think the whole team is. And I think if they think they need Greg and Greg's going to help, he's going to play. I think it's really that simple.
Well, I do think there just feels like there's maybe angst is the right word that you used. But it just feels like the team and the program is generally very much aware that this season has to be the season. You know, I'm not saying, well, we'll see how it turns out, obviously. And I'm not saying that, you know, Wojo is definitely fired if this season doesn't go well.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I don't know if I'd say the season, but it has to be a very positive season. Not
correct.
They made the NIT. That was good enough. You know, like, I think even players and coaches on that team would admit now, if, like, asked them, got an honest answer, is the NIT a successful season for this team? I think they would all say no.
Yeah, well, and Wojo has said, I've now attended three open practices. Two open practices and a season ticket holder practice, but they were all nominally the same. And Wojo has, in his comments, while he has not come out and said, you know, NCAA or bust, he's at least implied that this season has very high expectations in his esteem, that the team has a lot of experience and they should be able to come out strong. But then he always follows it up with, but we, you know, we got to get better every day, and all of the boilerplate that comes with being an NCAA coach. So I think the expectations are there with the team, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out specifically with regard to Greg Elliott's playing status.
Well, speaking of expectations, Big East Media Day was held this last week, and the coaches poll, put as much stock in it as you want to, came out. Villanova picked first to win the league again. Understandable. Marquette came in second, followed by, in this order, Providence, St. John's, Butler, Xavier, Georgetown, Seton Hall, Creighton. And guess who's picked 10th? DePaul. So let's talk about that poll. I guess no real surprises to me, Phil. Anything that jump out to you about the first? We'll get to the first and second teams in a minute, but as far as the coaches' poll, as far as pick to finish in the league?
I don't know that I'm surprised by any of it. St. John's, I feel like, is a little high. Now, this probably doesn't make sense coming from a Marquette fan, considering we picked second and haven't finished, you know, ties aside, haven't really finished higher than sixth or seventh in the league in the last couple of years. But I know on paper St. John's has a lot of pieces. But I have, you know, and again, given our track record, it's maybe a little disingenuous, but I'd be surprised if St. John's actually finishes fourth in the league. I just think that's a team that underperforms its talent or underperforms expectations. So I'd be surprised by it, but I'm not surprised that they are ranked where they are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I would say this about St. John's. I think I've even said on this podcast before that St. John's is that team that – I think it's because I follow a lot of New York sports writers on Twitter that everyone is always saying, St. John's a year away. They're like right there. They have the talent. They're just really close. I think they're about to break through, and I feel like we've been saying that for like 5 years about St. John's, and they're always in the NIT or worse. But I do think this is a talented St. John's team. Shamari Pons is the preseason player of the year, and Mustafa Heron was granted a waiver to play this year. The transfer from Auburn. So I think St. John's is going to be a dangerous team, and I think they could finish right near the top of the league, honestly, second or third. I wouldn't know if I'd pick them to win the league necessarily, but I think St. John's is actually going to be pretty good, and I think this might be the year that everyone's saying maybe this is the year for St. John's. I think this actually might be a pretty good year for them. So I think they're about where they could be. I'd almost say they might be low. I personally might put Villanova, Marquette, and then St. John's third if I were to do a preseason poll. But, I mean, there's really a lot of questions and a lot of parity between second and ninth, I think, in the conference.
It feels like that. It's that way every year, doesn't it?
It does. It seems like it's always Villanova at the top. And Villanova, I mean, I don't think it's insulting to say they're not going to be as strong as last year because they lost four NBA players. I think they'll be very good. And worthy of their preseason ranking. I think most preseason polls have them about in the top 10 somewhere, but you lose four NBA players, and I'm not sure they added four NBA players. They added the transfer, Joe Cremo, and then Javon Quinterly. It's a preseason freshman of the year. He's going to be a really good player, but I don't know if he's Jalen Brunson right off the bat. Villanova, they won the national title last year, and they were one of the best college basketball teams I've seen in the last decade or so. So I don't think it's insulting to say I don't think Villanova is going to be as good as they were, but they still may be good enough to win the league. But yeah, I think it's fair to have Marquette second in the preseason poll. Mentioned the first and second team briefly. Shamari Pons, as I said, preseason player of the year. Jesse Govan at Georgetown, Alpha Diallo, Providence. Marcus Howard was on the first team. Kamara Baldwin of Butler and Eric Paschal of Nova rounded out the first team. Sam Hauser on the second team. Preseason, and then I mentioned Javon Quinterly and David Duke. That poor kid, that's his name, but the point guard from Providence. He is also a preseason freshman of the year. So no love for the Marquette freshman on the preseason teams, but Howard and Hauser maybe about where they should be. I might even stump for Hauser to be preseason first team, but yeah, I guess I have no gripes with either of those selections where they were, Phil.
No, I don't have any gripes. I think it's fine. I think if the team's going to finish second in the Big East, you're probably going to end up with more than two, all conference players. But you know, we'll see. I don't know. It's gonna be a very interesting league. I mean, the Big East lost 19 out of its top 30 scorers after this past season, you know, either in terms of graduation or off to the NBA. So that's a lot of offense and a lot of productivity out the door. So how teams adjust will be very interesting, which is one of the reasons, I think, from a continuity standpoint, KenPom is out with the new rankings, but they don't have like continuity and experience stats yet in KenPom. But that's where the excitement for Marquette comes in, because they've got to be one of, if not the most experienced team coming into this season with a lot of change and turnover in the Big East generally. So you would think they'd be in kind of the catbird seat, if you will.
Yeah, let's touch on KenPom really quickly and look at the KenPom projections before we get to our own, which, you know, is probably not as accurate as KenPom's, but we'll just hope they are. I was pleasantly surprised. You know, granted, these are just preseason projections, but, you know, I think most people were looking at Marquette's KenPom stats the last couple of years. Marquette has been roughly a top 10 offense and a very bad defense. 165 overall in 2017, 182 in 2018. And I think a lot of us were saying, Phil, coming into this year, try to have a top 10 offense again and get a top 100 defense, and that should be good enough to be relevant and be, you know, certainly be a tournament team, if not be a team that can win some games in the tournament. KenPom has Marquette's defense 66th in his preseason projection. So definitely a top 100 team, according to that projection, and number 9 on offense. So I would sign for both of those right now, Phil, and he has their ranking as 29 of preseason. So I'd be great with all of that if it turns out that way.
Well, yeah, I guess this is one of the idiosyncrasies of KenPom. I would absolutely sign up for those numbers. And when we get to the record stuff, I struggle to understand it with a top 10 offense and a not disastrous defense, how this team would finish, you know, under 12 wins in the Big East, right? I mean, maybe he has a higher regard for the rest of the Big East as it rebuilds. But yeah, I mean, I would absolutely, I'm with you. I'd take those numbers in a heartbeat.
Yeah, the projections for Marquette's record, according to KenPom, are 19-11 overall, 10-8 in the conference. But if you go game by game, if you're not as familiar with KenPom, they, you know, they have projections based on efficiency and offensive and defensive efficiency. And if you go game by game, it may be a little different from the actual what the projection is, because the projection for the record acknowledges that some of these 50 games could go either way. So if you go game by game, he actually has Marquette at 22-8 and 12-6 in the conference. But right, again, some of those are 50-50 games, so he has the official Marquette record projection at 19-11 with a 10-8 Big East record. And I'm with you, Phil. If Marquette has a top 10 offense and a top 70 defense, that you would hope in a Big East that may not be as strong as past years, that should be good enough for 12 wins in the Big East, I would hope.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the it's hard to say because the numbers are predicated on, you know, what was there last year, what left, and a rough approximation of incoming players, right? I mean, you know, it depends on how he does he value Brendan Bailey, you know, the same as he would say a Joey Hauser, even though, you know, Bailey's a, you know, older, more mature player, even though he hasn't played, you know, because he was on the Mormon mission for the last 2 years, but he's physically more mature and older. Does that make a difference in stuff like that in terms of the way
yeah,
you rank
like
him?
I've always been curious about that. You know, how can you project the impact of freshmen, especially for a team like Duke, right, this year, which is
right,
going to be relying heavily on 4 freshmen. And so the only data you have on them is what they did in high school. So, I mean, it's kind of just guessing impacts on what those guys are going to do at the college level before you get into – and I know the experience of those guys kind of comes into play in December, and that's when he kind of drops the rankings from the previous season and then kind of recalculates and the rankings kind of shift a little bit. But, yeah, like how do you measure an impact, like you said, for Brendan Bailey and Joey Hauser and what they're going to do this year? And you know, even Ed Morrow, and I guess there's a lot of mystery, and so it's not like you really have to take these rankings as gospel. It's like, this is definitely the way it's going to go, any more than you would take a preseason AP poll, a preseason coaches poll. But it is an interesting thing, because KenPom is, you know, their formulas are very interesting, the way they calculate efficiency and on offense and defense, and how closely the efficiency is tied to wins and losses, even though the formula doesn't really take wins and losses into account at all. It
right.
just accounts for efficiency, and efficiency, the way they measure it, basically has a lot to do with teams that win. Like,
right.
it's pretty much impossible, according to KenPom, to be very efficient offensively and very efficient defensively and then lose a bunch of games, or vice versa, to be horribly inefficient and then somehow win a bunch of games. All those things come into play. So I've always fascinated with KenPom's numbers and the projections and how it all comes out at the end of the season. So early projections pretty good for Marquette, and hopefully they turn out and Marquette can have – I would definitely sign off for those rankings, like I said, on offense and defense. I would hope the projections wins and loss-wise would be a little higher if those numbers turn out that way.
Yeah, we're in agreement.
Yeah, so Phil, should we go into our game-by-game? And if we get off topic on any other subjects Marquette-related, maybe we may hop off on an exit and talk about something else related to the team as we go along through the record. But why don't we just go through game-by-game? We're going to give our prediction win-loss, and we'll see what we have Marquette's record as. You know, and Phil, I tend to play the role of the pessimistic one on this podcast and really temper my expectations in the preseason, as I kind of have the past couple years. I went through this one time, and I thought, wow, that's probably too many wins. I kind of went through it again and tried to be a little more down-to-earth, and I still came out with a lot of wins. But before we get started, Phil, I just want to say, I think it's time to be good, right? It's time to maybe raise the bar a little bit and say it's okay to have an expectation of being not just a team that barely sneaks into the tournament, but a team that is going to be safely into the tournament. And that's kind of where I am with this team this year.
Yeah, well, that's fair. I mean, first of all, as the resident optimist, if you are thinking you're selecting too many wins, apparently I've got them going undefeated or something ridiculous like that. But no, in all seriousness, I thought about that too. It's interesting that our thinking lined up, because, you know, I was sitting here thinking, man, I think they're going to be really good. I think the schedule breaks down really well for the experience they have, and kind of went, wow, that's even for me, that's a lot of wins. And I was like, they've let me down the last couple of years. I've been over optimistic and they let me down. And then I kind of went, you know what, like this, there is nothing other than just being superstitious or, you know, I suppose one could say, well, Wojo hasn't 100% proven that he can coach. So there's always that. But I don't see any reason on paper that this team should not be good.
Yeah, I am in agreement with you. I'm not predicting a Final Four or anything, but I'm ready to set an expectation that this team should be one of the more exciting teams and one of the more fun teams to watch. So let's jump into it, shall we?
Yes.
Let's start with the season opener, which is coming up on Tuesday the 6th at home against UMBC. Of course, the last time you saw UMBC, they were in the tournament, upsetting number one ranked Virginia, first 16 seed to ever win. Great story. Fun team, but then they really came down to earth against Kansas State in their next game. Phil, I'm hoping they stay down to earth in their season opener this year, and I've got Marquette winning the opener.
They should not sneak up on Marquette, you wouldn't think. home opener, stadium's going to be full. They absolutely cannot start that campaign off with a loss to UMBC. I think they're ready. Give them the win.
I think it is a creative opponent, though, to have a bye game, a game that you should definitely win, a team with all due respect, noticeably less talent than you, but a team with a little bit of name recognition that people are like, oh, that's cool that they're going to be there at Fiserv Forum in the first Marquette game there. So I think we're in agreement. Win there, and I don't think we need to break down Bethune-Cookman. I assume you got to win there as well, Phil.
Win there as well.
Yeah, sorry. So let's go to the first game that should certainly be a challenge, the Gavitt Games matchup at Indiana. Phil, I have this one as a loss because I just think it's the first road test. It's a little too early for me for this team that has some new pieces, and it's going to be the first significant game for Romeo Langford. He'll have a few games under his belt before that, but as far as the first big-name opponent, I think that environment is just going to be a little too crazy, and I'm going to say Marquette goes to Indiana and loses.
I struggled with this. This was one of the few games where I really waffled back and forth. I'm actually going to mark this as a win. I think Indiana is going to be very talented, but very young. And I think this is actually a game where Marquette's experience pays off. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, it'll only be two games under the belt for new additions like Joseph Chartouni and some of the other and Brendan Bailey and stuff like that. So some key players are going to be relatively new, but I think Marquette can go in and maybe Indiana struggles a little bit with the environment and the substantial nature of the game and Marquette steals one.
Yeah. All right, well, I hope you're right. But if you're not familiar with Romeo Langford, this guy is to call him a god may be just short of the truth in Indiana because he broke – I don't know if he broke the Indiana high school. I think he came just short of the high school scoring record in Indiana, but he was just, like, right there. He won a state championship, and, you know, he announced his college decision, and just Indiana fans packed the place and just – red everywhere, so they're just so thrilled to have him there. He's like one of the most beloved high school players in the last 30 years to come out of Indiana, so I just think that environment is just going to be too crazy. That's why I had it as a loss. I think we both have Presbyterian as a win, correct, Phil? So let's go.
Yep.
Move on to the big one, going to New York, preseason NIT tip-off, taking on the preseason number one, the Kansas Jayhawks. Now, they've been in the news for some negative reasons lately. They may not have Silvio D'Souza for this game or at all this season, but they still have a ton of talent. Phil, how do you have the Kansas game?
Unfortunately, not even super optimistic Phil can turn this into win. I think Kansas just has too much talent and too much experience and big road game. I think Kansas wins.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Hopefully it's not as bad as the last time they played at the 2003 Final Four.
Ugh.
It certainly won't be as heartbreaking no matter what the score is. But, yeah, I got it as a win as well. Even without D'Souza, I mean, I think his loss is not of significant impact because they got a McDonald's All-American there in the middle named David McCormick, who is going to fill that role just as well, perhaps better. He might have even taken time from D'Souza anyway this year. And then they've got Quentin Grimes, who we're all familiar with after his recruitment last year. He's probably a lottery pick. And then they got the Lawson brothers. Dedrick Lawson in their exhibition game looked fantastic, and he's like the preseason Big 12 player of the year. Kansas, they're going to win the game. I'm going to have Kansas winning that one. Now, the next one, Phil, don't know the opponent, Louisville or Tennessee. I based my projection on the assumption that Marquette loses to Kansas and Tennessee beats Louisville, so I have Marquette beating Louisville in the second game.
I really, really want – I mean – I don't think Marquette can beat Kansas, so and I'm hoping Louisville loses to Tennessee because I really want to face Louisville. But yes, I also have a win against Louisville.
It'll be good to see Chris Mack again. Maybe not good to see Louisville again, but I like Chris Mack, but still can't like Louisville. All right, so Charleston Southern after that. I assume you got a win there, Phil.
Correct.
All right, so let's go then to that critical stretch. Marquette's had a stretch like this each of the past few years where they've had, you know, a notable non-conference opponent, and then maybe a bye game, but not like a bottom feeder bye game, and then Wisconsin. They've had that kind of stretch like the past couple years, I want to say. This time, it's Kansas State, UTEP, Wisconsin. Let's start with Kansas State, which is Kansas State, a Final Four team from a year ago that brings a lot of people back. I think this is going to be a really tough game, but because it's at home, Phil, I'm going to say win.
I'm going to concur with that. I think it is a very tough game, but after the experience in New York, I think they'll have enough experience in the season to win a close one against Kansas State at home. That's the critical part, that it's at
Yeah,
at
interesting.
Home.
By the way, on the Kansas State thing, they officially announced the Big 12, not to get too off topic, but they announced the Big 12 Big East Challenge. I don't know if they're calling it that, but that series is going to start next year, and they have already said that the return game of this home-and-home, so when Marquette goes to Manhattan, Kansas next year, that will count as the Big 12 Big East game for Marquette next year. So basically there will not be another Big 12 opponent because of that challenge next year. So we already know Marquette's opponent next year. So this is the first game of a home-and-home. But yeah, I'm with you. KenPom actually has this as a 50-50 game. They have Marquette as a one-point favorite for what it's worth right now. So I have Marquette beating Kansas State. Now, UTEP may be a little lower in KenPom than I would have projected. I thought they may have been a little more relevant, but KenPom has UTEP as 275. So I'm hoping that's an easy win, Phil.
I don't know if it's going to be easy or not, especially when you look forward to the game after it and the game they played before it. I wouldn't be surprised if Marquette struggles with UTEP, but I think they ultimately get the win.
All right, so then the big one in non-con is, of course, the rivalry with the Wisconsin Badgers. You know, Wisconsin obviously returned some guys, you know, most notably Ethan Happ was a preseason All-American, your boy Buzzcut Brad Davison, but still, I'm picking this a win, man. You can't lose to Wisconsin in your first game with them at the Fiserv Forum. Got to win that game.
Absolutely not. That's that heart, stone cold lock. Marquette beats Wisconsin. Calling it right now.
Got to do it. Absolutely have to do it. All right. So then after that, Phil, three more bye games, which I'm not going to waste too much time breaking down. North Dakota, Buffalo, Southern. I got three wins. Well, actually, I don't want to blow past Buffalo. Let's say I assume you got North Dakota and Southern as wins.
Correct. Both are wins.
All right, so let's at least give Buffalo a little more respect, you know, because Buffalo preseason 71 in KenPom. So that could be another game, a sneaky game that could maybe bite Marquette as they approach, that's probably going to be maybe the last game. Well, it might be right after finals, actually. But still, that's a pretty decent opponent. Of course, they beat Arizona in the tournament last year. I think that's a tough game for sure, so I don't want to blow past them like they're on the same level as North Dakota and Southern. But still, I would have, just because it's at home, Marquette beating Buffalo.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, what little we know of Buffalo right now, I mean, they typically like to play very fast pace. I think Marquette's got the horses to play fast and play defense with them. And Buffalo is not particularly tall or a tremendous shooting team, or at least weren't last year. So I don't think it checks any of the boxes of historical Marquette deficiencies. So I would see reason to really be concerned. It's a great game to schedule, but I do think Marquette gets the win there as well.
Yeah, I'm with you. So to hit pause here in our predictions. So through the non-con, fairly optimistic for both of us. I've got Marquette at 11-2. You've got them at 12-1. And I'll say this, Phil: if Marquette is 12-1 as we hit Big East play, they're going to probably be ranked pretty doggone high. And even if they're 11-2, I think they would be, might be on the cusp of being ranked, but they would at least be on the national radar. And I'll just throw this out just for fun: if somehow they upset Kansas and, you know, leave New York with a win, they're going to be, like, in the top five. Not to say they would be a top five team, but kind of like Arizona State was last year, where they got a bunch of impressive wins in the non-conference and were suddenly, like, two in the country. Marquette's schedule is strong enough that if they were to, like, start 6-0, 7-0, 8-0, they would be ranked ridiculously high. Then they'd probably come back down to earth once they get into Big East play. But still, even with the records we have, Phil, I think Marquette is going to be on the national radar if you or I are correct in our projections.
I agree, but it feels weird being here after the last 4 or 5 years, you know. But even under Buzz, the teams weren't particular. You know, they did well in the tournament, obviously, but I don't think there were any like top 10 teams there throughout the season. So this season is the season to have high expectations. So that'll be very interesting to see how it shakes out. Now, the inverse can be true. I mean, like you said, the schedule's tough. So if Marquette loses 4 or 5 games, it's not great. It's not ideal. But it also shouldn't be disastrous, right? Because, I mean, they're playing.
Yeah, my thing is, if you get up towards 5, I mean, you're going to be looking at your resume saying, who did you beat? Right. You know, like,
well,
you know,
it just puts all the pressure on the Big East season, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna have to win a bunch of games in the Big East play to make up for that. I would say Marquette loses 5 in that non-conference. Granted, it's a tough non-conference, but you got to have something on your resume to show for it. You can't say, well, we went through non-conference, we played some good teams, we lost to all of them, but, you know, we beat everybody else.
Right.
That's just not going to get it done when you're trying to go to the tournament selection committee. You gotta beat somebody. So.
It feels weird to say. I agree with you. It feels weird to say, but I would say if they have more than 3 losses in the non-conference, the team's in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, I would say 4 is the high end. Like, you get to 4 non-conference losses, like, we got to make up some ground in Big East play. If you can get it at 3 or lower, I think you're fine.
Yeah.
And then you just got to take care of business. So let's get into Big East projections, Phil. It starts with the new year, New Year's Day, January 1st, 2019, at St. John's. So starting on the road, just because I think because it's on the road, I actually have them opening Big East play with a loss at St. John's. I mentioned earlier, I think St. John's is going to be – might be actually be pretty good for a change.
Yeah.
So I got them opening with a loss.
I get where you're coming from on that. And I do think they will definitely be talented. The fact that it's on the road on New Year's Day, I mean, hell, there'll probably be a blizzard again that'll force them to move it a day or something like that. But there's no doubting that that St. John's has talent. But I also, when I look at their non-conference schedule, they ain't playing nobody. The highest ranked team I see is Georgia Tech. Which is a 92. Now they might be in a tournament I'm not seeing, where they'd play some higher.
Oh yeah. I'm not sure about that, but yeah, you're right.
You know, so maybe they'll play some quality opponents in a tournament somewhere that doesn't show up on the schedule, but I they're going to have a lot of talent, but they're going to be not tremendously experienced. And you would hope, Marquette will learn from all the disasters that were, the disasters that were the games against St. John's last year. They should be able to contain Pons a little bit, or at least not let Pons beat them all by himself. So I'm going to go, soliloquy aside, I'm going to go with a win for Marquette in that first game.
I hope you're right. It would certainly be nice to beat them. But yeah, I guess I didn't even take into account. By the way, you asked about they're not the only other team, and I googled it real quick while you were speaking. The only other game that doesn't appear on St. John's schedule that you're looking at is after the Cal game, they play either Temple or VCU. So they really don't have, and those games are in Brooklyn, so it's not like they're going anywhere.
So my opinion remains unchanged.
It does. Actually, yeah, let me check this. Yeah, they do not leave, I could say they don't leave the state of New York, but they do go to New Jersey to play Rutgers, but they don't leave like the tri-state area. Oh, they play Georgia Tech in Florida. So that's the only time they actually leave the state in non-conference. So
that feels like one of those, like last year's Georgetown, where Georgetown played nobody and they ended up ranked after they started like 10-0.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, like we could be playing an undefeated, like overrated, like 15 ranked St. John's team,
right,
to open the Big East play. That could be something that happens. We'll see. All right, so let's get on back to the projections. So we disagree on the first game. Next game, Xavier at home, first Big East game at home. I've got Marquette beating X in the first.
I do as well. I think home court matters in this one.
Yeah. Then on the road at Creighton. Creighton not picked particularly high in the Big East preseason poll, 9th actually. So I'm hoping Marquette can go to Omaha and get a win in their third Big East game.
I will also concur. I think they defeat the Creighton Blue Jays.
All right. So you've got them off to a 3-0 start in Big East play. Then coming back home to Seton Hall. Seton Hall always going to be a competitive game, but you know they did lose a number of guys. So I'm hoping Marquette will be better than Seton Hall at home. So I've got them moving to 3-1 on my projections with a win over Seton Hall.
Shockingly, I also have them winning.
Well, mercy, Mr. Optimist over there.
Right, it's going to be a run.
Yeah, so for the next game, you know, I told you when I went through this the first time, I thought I had a Marquette for too many wins. I tried to find a couple spots to have a stinker in Big East play, because you're going to have some where you just lose some games you maybe don't want to. And that's where I decided to put a loss here at Georgetown. I think an improving Georgetown team against Tremont Waters, who is back for another year. Jesse Govan is back. So I think Georgetown actually takes a little step forward and is going to be a little relevant this year. I don't know if they're going to be great or tournament quality, but I'm going to say Georgetown will trip up Marquette in this game. So that's Marquette's fifth game of Big East play. So I'm going to say a loss at Georgetown.
I get it. I understand. I honestly wanted to one of these next two games, Georgetown or Providence at home, say, oh man, there's going to be a disaster looming there. I just can't. I Georgetown may be getting better, but I just don't think they're going to be good. And the Marquette will have enough road game experience at that point that I think they can keep the demons at bay for a road win at Georgetown.
All right. So did you predict a win? Predict a loss in the next game at home against Providence?
I did not actually. I again, I wanted to, but I see this team on a tear to start the Big East.
Providence is going to be a tough one for me. Because for the home game with Providence, I went with a win. So another win for me, and then DePaul at home. For the love of Pete, you better beat DePaul at home. So,
oh my gosh! This probably the DePaul games are where I'm at my least optimistic. Just over the years, it feels. But there is no way this team loses to what should be an atrocious DePaul game or DePaul team. You know, that's still wriggling from an assistant coach verbally threatening both the AD and the head coach with murder. So, yeah, that DePaul's not good. That's going to be a win for me, there, Bob.
Even with preseason second team, All Big East, Max Strus.
Oh, God. that guy haunts my nightmares, but yes, still.
Yeah. So, yeah, I got a win there. So then next game, at Xavier. This was a tough one, but like I said earlier, I think it's time to raise some expectations to be good. I have them going to Cincinnati and beating Xavier.
You know, I wanted to say, you know, Xavier takes a step back without Chris Mack and Marquette can get the better of them. I just don't know at this point, and I don't think that Marquette can go. Marquette's not billed to win like 12 games in a row and win every tough road game. So I actually have this one as a loss. I think Marquette loses at Xavier. Maybe they lose a little focus after a string of victories, but I'm going to mark them down for a loss.
For those keeping track, that ends a 15-game winning streak on Phil's projections.
Well, hey, they had to lose sometime. What are you going to do?
And then next game, Phil, next game I have is a loss going to Butler. Butler going to Hinkle is always going to be tough, so I have a road loss at Butler after that.
I also have a road loss at Butler. Look out, kids. Two losses in a row.
All right, so now you're starting to come back down to earth after 15 wins in a row, Marquette back-to-back losses. Marquette Twitter is in a panic. Everyone is burning things and screaming and calling for coaching changes. But then we get St. John's at home and get back on track. I say Marquette avenges what I predicted would be an early loss, and I say Marquette beats St. John's at home.
I agree. I think Marquette defeats St. John's at home, kind of rights the ship after those two tough losses, getting back home and a little time off. There's actually just about a week between the Butler and St. John's game, so I think that's a win for Marquette over St. John's.
All right, then next one should be one of the hottest Big East or one of the biggest home games of the season for Marquette, defending national champion Villanova. Coming to the Fiserv Forum on February 9th. It's a Saturday, which means that place is just going to be packed. It's going to be loud. And Phil, going with my theme of it's time to be good and it's time to raise the expectations, I have Marquette beating Nova at home this year.
I think that's fair, but I just couldn't pull the trigger with that many wins already on the books. I think Marquette struggles in this one and loses to Villanova at home.
All right, so we disagree on that. We've actually disagreed quite a little bit over the last few picks here, but mostly the record's the same, I think, as we're keeping score here. We'll tell it a little up at the end. Then at DePaul, the frequent nightmare where bad things always happen when Marquette travels to DePaul. I can't allow it, Phil. As much as I'm tempted to pick this as a loss because it happens so often, seemingly. Maybe it just seems to happen, like it seems like it happens so often because when it does happen, it's just so crushing and maddening. But I'm hoping that Marquette goes to DePaul this year and wins.
Well, I'm banking on the fact that it will be at the Wind Trust this year and not the House of Horrors that is the Rosemont Arena. So I'm going to say the venue change and the rampant corruption that went into the Wind Trust facility. I'm going to assume there's some sort of curse on DePaul and Marquette actually defeats DePaul at DePaul.
DePaul. Keep getting those verbal commitments from eighth graders. It's going to turn the program around eventually.
And make sure to keep offering large bribes to players to come play for you in FBI scandals, and those players have no intention of coming to play for you.
Yeah, DePaul's not only bad, they're bad at cheating too. If you're going to cheat, at least have some wins to show for it. All right, so after traveling to DePaul, Marquette comes back home and faces Butler. I've got them beating Butler at home.
I do as well. I think this is kind of the they got over their late January, early February swoon, and start to put the pieces together again against a tough Butler team.
All right, so now this is probably the toughest stretch in the Big East. I know they're all tough. It's Big East play. But this is probably the toughest back-to-back in Big East play, a Saturday game at Providence followed by a Wednesday game at Villanova. I think this is a pretty tough back-to-back, Phil, and I have it reflecting as such in my projections. I have them losing at Providence and then going to Villanova and losing as well.
I would have them losing both of those as well. Tough, like you said, tough stretch, couple of days in between on the road. In fact, I wonder if they even come back between the games.
I mean, it's Saturday, Wednesday, so probably. I mean, they'd probably fly back right after Saturday. And then.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, Sunday, a couple days, you know, maybe a day of classes, I guess, and then back in the – I don't know, who knows, maybe knows. It's still back-to-back against two teams that I think are both going to be in the tournament. Road games and Big East play, I got them both as losses.
Concur.
So now can they right the ship and finish strong here? Home against Creighton, I mentioned earlier, they're picked to finish near the bottom of the Big East for what it's worth, and so I'm hoping for a home win against Creighton.
I am as well.
Last Big East road game at Seton Hall. That one was a tough one. I waffled on this one, but I decided to be optimistic and go win.
I also went win. I was tired of having two-game losing streaks, so Seton Hall is going to lose.
All right. And then finally, the last game of the season, senior day for Matt Helt and Joe Chartouni, home against Georgetown, and I got that as a win.
I also have it as a win. I don't think we let Patrick Ewan come in and ruin the milkman's day.
No, can't do it. Got to have a big day, big send-off for Matt Helt.
I forgot to ask, which one of these games is National Marquette Day? Because if I had it for a win, I might want to change it to a loss.
So now you're going to make me Google it. I want to say it's the Nova game on the 9th, wasn't it?
It could be, yeah. Okay, I had it as a loss anyway.
So we're doing the math here. I have Marquette at 13-5 in the Big East, and you do as well, Phil. We just have a few differences on which games they win and which games they lose. So doing the total scores, I have Marquette at 24-7 overall, 13-5 in the Big East. Phil, you have them at 25-6 overall, so one game better, but same record as I do, 13-5 in the Big East.
I would take either one of those. Either one of those records is top 15?
Yeah.
Top 20 at least?
Maybe. I would hope so. I think you're certainly ranked. The question is 13 wins, where does that finish you in the Big East? Is DePaul going to have 14 wins? Is DePaul going to have 15 wins in the Big East?
Villanova? DePaul better not have 14 wins in the Big East.
I was looking at the schedule and I said that. By the way, the Villanova game is National Marquette Day.
Yeah. Yep. Loss anyway. That lines up. But yeah, no.
But anyway,
the question is, does Villanova have a ton of, you know, more than 13 wins?
Yeah. So maybe the way the last few seasons have gone, possibly. But I think Villanova, like I said before, I don't see them steamrolling through the conference like they have the last few years. And even though I guess technically Xavier did beat them out in the regular season, but I think Marquette could be right there with them. Like, heading into those last three games, we could be talking about, is there any way Marquette could win the Big East, right?
Who
knows? That game at Villanova, the fourth to last game of the season, that could be a game that we're looking at, hey, this is essentially for the Big East Conference. You know, the winner of this game could have the edge going in. So, you know, it's a fun way to look at it, and who knows the way it's all going to shape out, but who knows? That game is so late in the season, we could... By that point, we'll have a pretty good grasp on who is actually legitimately good in the Big East and how close Marquette is to being at the top of it. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But 13-5 sounds like, to me, close to Big East championship quality. Maybe not. Maybe a game or two short, though.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't – at 13-5, I wouldn't be shocked if they won the Big East. But I certainly don't think they're finishing lower than second in the Big East with that kind of record.
Yeah, I'm with you there. If you got 13 wins, I don't think there are going to be three or four teams with 14 or more. I don't know if that's even mathematically possible. I would think you're going to be right near the top with 13 wins. So hopefully we're both right on that account. And you and I basically have the same record, just disagree on a few different games there. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. Before we wrap this thing up, Phil, I know you had another kind of exercise you wanted to do as far as player projections.
Yeah, so I'm stealing a little bit from an old '90s movie, 10 Things I Hate About You. I thought we could have a quick chat about, you know, what players, you know, Marquette players do we project, you know, based on what everyone's seemingly thinking about them, which ones do we think will overwhelm our projection, which ones will underwhelm our projection, the current projections, and which one will just whelm us, right? So kind of which ones will exceed expectation, which player will not meet expectations, and what player will, you know, the expectations will be spot on for them.
Okay. Where do you want to start?
Let's go negative to positive. So who do we think is going to underwhelm us this season?
Okay, I want to make this clear before I start giving my picks. I'm not saying the player I'm picking is necessarily overrated or bad.
Correct.
I'm saying maybe the expectations may be a little high.
That's the whole point of this game.
And so for that reason, I am going to go with Ed Morrow. And I think because we looked at his rebounding stats and we're so hopeful that he's going to change the defense, I think some may have the sense that he is Ben Wallace, circa 2005. I think he's a very good player, and he's going to help the rebounding and the defense. But as far as being a dominant post player, I think maybe just a bit short of that. He'll be in the rotation. He's going to play a lot. He's going to rebound a lot and hopefully help the defense. I would just say I don't think you're getting a first-team All-Big East player with Ed Morrow.
I think that's excellent. I think that's more of a reflection, to your point, a reflection on his on the expectations that the fan base puts on players relatively sight unseen than it is on, you know, how good or bad the player is. So that's a good one. Who I had for underwhelm, and again it's not this player isn't good or player won't be good in the future, but I actually have Joey Hauser as the underwhelming.
How dare you?
I made mention, I've been to a number of practices now. And again, I think he's going to be good long-term. I just don't expect him at this point to really be, he's not going to be, Sam Hauser. I mean, they're going to play different positions. Sam came in a different time when we really needed kind of that firepower and that height. I think there's a lot more pieces available to Wojo that he doesn't have to bring Joey Hauser along as quickly. Plus, I'm not convinced that he's 100% totally recovered from his ankle surgery and whatnot. So I think he gets brought along pretty slowly, and I think everyone just needs to kind of calm themselves on the Hauser obsession. Again, I think he's going to be very good long term. I just think this year he plays maybe 10-15 minutes a game. He's not going to be lights out. He's not going to be a game changer. Not because he doesn't have the talent, but just because the team's got a lot of talent in that position ahead of him that I think will be productive.
Yeah, not quite statistically what we got out of Henry Ellenson.
Correct. Correct.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Hopefully more wins, though.
Yeah, one would hope, certainly.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so we go into whelm next?
Yes, just whelm.
Meeting expectations?
These are this is the guy who you think meets your expectations.
Okay, I'm going to go with Sam Hauser on this one, just because if he exceeds expectations, he's going to be a first-team All-American. So I think expectations for Sam are very high, and I think he's going to be exactly who we hope he's going to be. I think he's going to be hopefully healthy, because obviously I think his hip injury really slowed him down last year and probably cost him a shot to shoot 50% from three on the season. As he kind of like that pain got worse and worse as he got into the NIT. But Sam is going to be that guy. He is going to be a fantastic player. He's preseason second team All Big East, might be first team All Big East at the end of the season, but I think that would be essentially meeting what Marquette fans expect of Sam Hauser. Now, he may exceed what people think nationally of Sam, because I don't think nationally many people have him as a top 50 player in the country, but I think a lot of Marquette fans do. I know paint touches is all about standing for Sam Hauser and will not stand for any Sam Hauser blasphemy. I'm with him on that. Is the guy should be included in every preseason Big East Player of the Year discussion. He should be, I don't know if All-American is a bit of a stretch, but as far as relevant players nationally, who I think people who pay a lot of attention to college basketball, they are going to be all about Sam Hauser by the end of the year. Just recognizing he is just, I don't know if he's going to be a great NBA player, but I think he's just going to be a guy who's going to be a damn good college basketball player. And I think he'll be a guy who could, if he leads the team in points and rebounds this year, I think that's about what Marquette fans expect out of him. So I've got Sam Hauser as my guy who will be whelming or meeting exactly what we expect this year.
Yeah, I think that's a great the logic is extremely sound, a great pick. And actually the logic's kind of why I picked Marcus Howard, right? I mean, for Marcus to exceed expectations would mean, he's the best player in the Big East.
A
first team All-American. So I think Marcus is going to be well served playing off the ball. I think with Chartouni and his distribution capability, I think Marcus will really do well, and he won't have to create as much of his own shots. So I think the recipe is there for him to exceed expectations, but expectations for Marcus are so darn high to begin with. I mean, I just can't expect him to exceed expectations. So I think he's, like I said, similar to your logic with Sam Hauser, I think for him to exceed expectations would mean he's playing otherworldly, and I just don't see it.
Yeah, and I think like the expectations for Marcus aren't just limited to the Marquette fan base. Was it like Andy Katz? I think had him in his preseason top 10 players in the country.
Yep.
And I think some other publications have him similarly ranked as a top 10, top 20 overall player in the country. And yeah, and if he meets those expectations, yeah, I think Marquette's going to be in great shape.
Yeah, exactly. So who do you have for your overwhelm or will exceed expectations this season?
You know, I'm going to go with a guy who I'm not sure enough people really talk about because we're excited about newcomers and all that. And he showed some growth towards the end of last year. I think I'm expecting a big year out of Sakar Anum. I think he may, like we mentioned earlier, he may even get some minutes at point guard, depending if Greg Elliott is going to miss an extended period of time. And I think he showed a lot of ability as a scorer towards the end of last year. If his outside shot continues to come around a little bit, he showed a great ability to, slash to the basket. And I think he's already established to be a pretty decent defender as far as what Marquette needs. I think I'm expecting a big year out of Sakar.
Oh, that's excellent choice. I went a different direction, and for the record, it should be noted that we talked about the underwhelm, overwhelm, whelm, but we did not discuss our picks. So these have been picks in the blind. I like your Sakar pick, but I'm actually going with a newcomer, and this actually relates back to my underwhelm. But I'm going to pick Brendan Bailey. Hands down, he has been. And again, maybe because my expectations weren't super high, but hands down, he has been the most positively impactful player in the practices I've seen. He looks like he's in the flow of the offense, shoots the ball well, is positioned well on rebounds and defense. I think, and again, goes back to, I think where we might otherwise have thought, oh, Joey Hauser's going to get minutes. I think those minutes go to Brendan Bailey. He's got the flexibility to play the three, the four. I mean, he could even play, I don't think they'll ever do this, but he could play a Draymond type, five. And that's not to say he is Draymond. I mean, for like a college level.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Not at all comparing, but I think he's, again, he's 2 years older than your common freshman. He did not seem rusty, like he hadn't been playing for 2 years. I think he's a very smart basketball player, and I think he's really gonna wow some people who are maybe kind of overlooking him.
You know, I when I was going over my picks for this, Phil, I considered Brendan for both underachieve or for both underwhelm and overwhelm. I considered him for both because, like, if you had done this exercise back in April, I almost certainly would have put him in the underwhelm category to the point of, like, oh, well, even I know he's coming off a mission, but maybe he redshirts this year because he hasn't played basketball in 2 years, and I'm just not sure where he's going to get minutes. But I'm kind of with you, and maybe I'm just buying into like Twitter buzz, the palpable buzz, if you will. Maybe not necessarily from Rothstein, but you know, guys, writers who have visited Marquette practices, you know, some of the beat writers who've checked out a few things, like they're kind of saying like I don't think it's really BS either. They're saying like Brennan Bailey looks like legit good. Like he's ready to contribute like right now, despite having 2 years off where I don't know how often he was allowed to work out or had time to work out or like shoot around in a gym, but I know those things are pretty limited and I know the rules kind of vary depending on what mission you're doing. But I just really back in April, I didn't expect anything from Brennan Bailey and I'm still kind of sitting on that island. I think Anonymous Eagle's there with me. It's like, I mean, let's let him get in a few minutes before we actually put any expectations. But I have not heard one negative or even like temper your expectations kind of thing from anybody about Brennan Bailey. Like, right. It seems like everyone is just buzzing about this dude's talent. That who knows? He may be that freshman that surprisingly exceeds expectations, because I have to say there's been a freshman who's done that under every year under Wojo, hasn't there? It seems like there's always a freshman, maybe more than one, who's like, wow, this guy can really play. I mean, like last year I would almost say it about all of them. Elliot Kane and John all did some really nice things last year, and who knows, maybe that is that Brendan is that guy this year. But yeah, like I've as much as I was dead set on saying he's hardly going to play this year back, you know, 4 or 5 months ago, right now I'm starting to buy into the hype that he might actually be really, really good.
Well, and that's the thing. If I hadn't seen it with my own eyes in the practice, and again, you take that with a grain of salt in terms of, you know, you're going against your own team and that sort of thing. But there was not one time when I was watching the games where I said, I think Brendan's out of place or he doesn't know what he's doing or, oh, there's the rust. I mean, everything looks smooth. He looked good on the defensive end. And I think more than anything that stood out because I thought, well, what we don't need is someone who can score a bunch, but can't play defense at Division I level right now. And his defense was solid and he was able to guard all the way down to the two. Against Marquette in a couple of switch positions I wouldn't recommend it on a regular basis, but he certainly was able to hold his own against the likes of Sakar. So again, we'll see how it shapes up, but I would not be shocked to see Brendan Bailey getting a consistent 15, 20 minutes a game, especially come Big East conference season.
Yeah, I hope you're right. Cause the buzz around him has been so positive, and I think part of it comes from maybe even the Marquette staff hoping. He's like, all right, well, you know, we hope he comes back and he's ready to play, you know, and then like maybe they see him like, yes, like he's exactly what we hoped and more. And so like I think they're all really excited about him, and I think the players are excited, and I think anyone who's been around the program, you said you've been at the practices, so that's good enough for me. So I'm buying on Brendan Bailey right now, and like I don't want to put the expectations too high on him, like he's going to be, you know, Big East all freshman team or anything, but who knows, maybe he could be really, really good. So yeah, those are our picks. So how you feeling about it? Feeling good?
I feel good. I feel good that we picked different players and it all made logical sense. So it works for me.
Yeah, I just hope we're right on those records, man.
Like, no kidding.
I think even like my pessimistic records this past couple years still tended to be a little high. Like,
yeah,
even when I was a little pessimistic and gave them a few losses here and there, I still think they finished with like two or three more losses than even I had them at. But I think it's time to raise the bar a little bit, and I think even the staff and the players would agree with that. And it's time to be relevant, time to be good. I think the Big East is there for the picking. Even it would not be totally shocking and stunning if this team won the Big East. And I'd still understand picking Villanova to win it because, you know, guys like Pascal and Booth step into starring roles this year, and they bring in Quinterly, who at this point in time probably believes he is a one and done. We'll see if he is or not, but he's that kind of talent at point guard. So Villanova's going to be darn good, but I think Marquette can hang with him, as opposed to last year when I would pick Marquette to lose to Villanova in Philadelphia, in Milwaukee, or on the moon. But I think they can hang with that team this year, and they should be able to hang with just about any team on their schedule, even Kansas. Kansas is going to beat them, but I don't think Marquette is going to go out there and get their doors blown off by anybody.
If it's not this year, I don't know what year. You know what I mean? Like, we can talk all we want about how next year, you know, like Kobe McEwen has been looked really great in practice. So I think they're going to be just fine at point guard next year. But I just don't see how. Yeah, you're really only losing Matt Helton and Joseph Chartouni. But if this team isn't pretty good this year, I don't see how we can expect them to be pretty to really good next year, right? So, like, the team's just got to be good this year, I think.
Yeah, I think, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, I think if you, like, honestly heard from any of the staff or the coaches, any of the coaches or the players this year, if you asked them, would an NIT berth be a good season? I think they would all say no.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Well, we're looking forward to another season with you guys. We appreciate you sticking with us, and hopefully the schedule by schedule wasn't too boring for you, and hope you enjoyed our picks. Let us know what you think. We always love hearing from you. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. You can hit up Crack Sidewalks, the team handle. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. You can leave your comments there. You can also please rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate that. That looks good. And I think that's about it. That's actually
That sounds like everything we usually do.
So we're probably not going to have a podcast next week, but probably we'll have another one until the season begins. But once the season does begin, we'll probably be back on the schedule doing this once a week. So we'll check in with you every week and give you our takes, hot or otherwise, about the team and see how it's going. So we are looking forward to the ride this year.
Absolutely. Looking forward to getting the season underway, which hopefully, based on our projections, should be a pretty good one to watch.
All right. Until next one, everyone. Steve Shields and Balloons.